A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Force Center podcast feed is a deep dive. We are doing one of our scene-by-scene episodes, which means we're diving deep into a specific scene. And the scene we are calling, it is from The Phantom Menace, and we are calling it Boss Nass's Throne of Judgment, and I can't wait to sit in the throne with the boss. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Cad Napsok, and my entire Star Wars fandom of the last 20-plus years has led to this moment.
It's a good moment. I can't wait, because you and I have talked about elements of this scene. And I think we have talked a little bit about Boss Nass, but as I was writing up the notes, there's like, there's some things that I really don't know Ken's opinion on. This is going to be so great. I'm so excited. but before we get into all the Boss Nass deliciousness, we want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week, we're recommending Light of the Jedi by Charles Soule. Of course, the first book in the High Republic series. The next book is coming out very soon, so get caught up with us. You can download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/forcecenter for your free audiobook. But Ken, we also have another offer, right?
We do. Inset Editions, publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books and other pop culture titles, is offering 35% off across their website with a special Force Center code. To get your discount, enter the coupon code FC35 or visit the website with this link, insideeditions.com/discount. /FC35. This week, we're recommending the Inside Editions book, Secrets of the Jedi. Check it out with the code FC35. And yeah, get that book and get ready for Secrets of the Sith coming your way soon. So there you go. Some offers for you. I wonder if Boss Nass would take those offers.
Well, maybe we can answer that at the end of the podcast after we've really spent some time in Boss Nass's mind. Would he read Secrets of the Jedi? Or would he just be pissed?
We saw no like in the Jedi. We'll see at the end of the story. We'll see.
We'll see. We'll see. Well, if you haven't listened to one of these episodes before, we really love doing these scene by scene episodes. We try to break down big scenes in Star Wars, but we've also been just gravitating towards scenes that we're intrigued by, that we think maybe there's more to discuss, that sometimes maybe that element of the scene or that element of the film or story doesn't get discussed as often. I try to do this list. We'll see if I can make it through, Ken, because it's getting long.
Yes.
These are the other scene-by-scene episodes we've discussed. Rey's Cave of Mirrors, Dooku's Cell of Half-Truths, Palpatine's Box of Lies, Obi-Wan's Hut of Exposition, Palpatine's Lab of Horrors, Luke and Vader's Walkway of Doubt, Kenobi's Campfire of Resolution, and Dexter's Diner of Wisdom. Now, joining the fray, Boss Nass's Throne of Judgment. Very excited. This is obviously from The Phantom Menace. It's about 2.5 minutes of negotiation, Jedi philosophy, cultural exchange, comedy, travel plans, and a large fish guy spitting. Pretty great. It has elements of comedy and weirdness that definitely I think some fans pushed back on during its original release. And I just kind of want to start there, Ken. Mm-hmm. Did you dislike this back in the day? And if you've come around to this scene and this character, what made it happen?
Back in the day, coming out of the theater, I didn't hate this scene. I didn't dislike a lot of this scene, but it built in me. And I would
the anger.
Yeah. I would point to this scene a lot of see why that whole movie sucks. But so this scene is a testament to many things, bad prequel moments. But it's also moments you come to appreciate more. And it's a scene full of little things that I never forgot, which what I mean by that is, even as I made fun of them, this is what I call the seismic charges effect of it all. Yeah, we talk a lot about, I don't know, Attack of the Clones, I don't like it. It's my lowest ranked Star Wars movie. But those seismic charges, Boss Nass became that character for me. And I've already done it once. I'm sure you're going to do it. We apologize ahead of time if we do, just like with Dexter Jetster, if we do a bad Dexter voice or a bad Boss Nass impersonation, we apologize in front of it. But it's hard not to.
It's part of the charm.
It's part of the charm. And saying through the planet core and now go and all these things, and he is to be punished. To say all the, they never left me. And you might not like overall some of the stuff in presentation. We'll get into some of that, but like it's there in you. You keep replaying it in your mind and you're connected to it almost in spite of yourself. And that was this scene. Later on, this scene kind of became it was in a popular video that made fun of Phantom Menace, okay. This particular moment. And I remember, that scene. See, yeah, this scene's so boring. So this video is right. And that's just so surface level. Is it perfect? No. I think one of the things in a 4K world, some of the Phantom Menace, all the prequels, you know, don't stand up as much. And this is one of those moments. It almost looks animated in a way, not maybe in a great way. But that's just the surface. Once you dig in, I got to tell you, man, I absolutely love it. There's so much here. You touched upon it. So Naboo-Gungan relationships, the themes of the movies are in here, the designs, everything about it. And then one hell of a memorable performance of this wild character. And therefore, that's why we're here. It's why I'm excited to get into this.
Yeah, I think you're saying a lot of great things that I really agree with. I think people who've been listening for a long time kind of know our journey with the prequels from having dubious relationships with them as they came out to really coming to love and appreciate them. I think there's also been some things I've been seeing kind of bubbling up on social media that this is such a thing of perspective, right? And I think if you grew up with the prequels and you were young and you were just around other people who liked the prequels, and that was never any doubt, like, this is Star Wars, this is great. I totally understand that that's a perspective. Sometimes where we're coming at this conversation is we grew up in the original trilogy, watching generation, And then I think a lot of our angst and pushback towards the prequels was it's different. It's not exactly what we were expecting. So that's what we're coming at this conversation from, of those initial reactions when you have some of the baggage of, but Star Wars should look like this, but it should feel like this. And then Lucas comes out and is like, look, I'm really playing. I'm expanding the canvas. In this scene, I think, is really representative of some of that that canvas expansion. Mm-hmm. And we get distracted, at least I did, and I think you're with me, when it first comes out, kind of distracted by some of the surface and not able to appreciate some of the depth. And yeah, that's definitely, for me, the journey here. I thought Boss Nass was weird and funny. Like, of the things that I wasn't sure about in the film when Phantom Menace first came out, I was like, I don't know that I think that's like really cool or deep, but it is funny when Angry Fish Guy is spitting all over everybody.
Yeah.
And in my journey with Phantom Menace, was even though I had a lot of criticisms and concerns at the time, and they should have done this, they should have done that, it didn't stop me from absorbing it. And I bought that VHS Ooh. The day it came out and watched it again and again and again. And exactly what you're describing, the spending time with something that you're initially like, I don't think that's great. But then you find yourself just saying Planet Core for no reason, just to yourself, because mm-hmm. it's fun.
Yeah.
And that's a part of how the kind of the surface level starts to grow on you. Right. And then the big picture, what's the scene actually about, starts to really sink in. I remember the first viewing, I was really struck by the idea that a life debt crossed cultures, because that was one of the things that I knew, right? Of like, Chewbacca has a life debt with Han Solo. That's really cool. And the fact that another culture could have a life debt. And Qui-Gon's much more casual Jedi mind trickery.
Yeah.
Those were the things that really engaged me when I was first absorbing Phantom Menace, because there were things that were in conversation with the Star Wars I knew before. So I think I was really intrigued by the life debt. I was really intrigued by the casual Jedi mind trick of like, I'm not even putting the energy into lifting my hand too far. It's just a quick Jedi mind wipe. But once I started spending more time with the Phantom Menace and the prequels in general, and really engaging with the prequels just as they are, dropping any baggage of expectation and just like, what is there? What is being communicated? I think I always understood the mechanics of what was happening in this scene of, yep, this is building relationships that's going to pay off later in the film. It's about helping each other. That's great. But the depth of that, the power of that, the intention of it, how it connects to so many other beats in this film, so many other moments in Star Wars, how just consistent and powerful the philosophy behind what is going on in this scene, that just, you know, bloomed like a flower in my soul when I dropped all the baggage and engaged with the prequels as they are.
Yes hands in the air, I'm saying preach on, sir, because what you know, you could look at the way Lucas executed these films and made them, and hey, I made them for kids, and that could be some. We use that sometimes to be like, but don't forget, other people use it as, oh, he did it. And here's the thing. When you really, really listen to some of the things going on in The Phantom Menace, and you go, if you take it take it as the truth from George of like, I wanted to do this again for a new generation in a different way and expand my own story. The stuff that's going on there, we've said it, the occupation of Naboo isn't as peaceful as you'd think. In fact, E.K. Johnston's second novel goes into some of the brutality in this occupation going on there. The idea, one of the reasons I just admire and look up to the character of Padme is in this particular movie, a 14-year-old queen, is going against a long-held, we don't know how long-held kind of view of segregation on her planet and saying, we cannot do that if we're going to survive. And Jar Jar is there saying, we're proud warriors. And she realizes what she has to do. And that goes, all that comes out of this scene. If you go back to it, and the more you learn and understand Qui-Gon, you get Obi-Wan in a lot of ways. He's just out there like, hey, you guys need to work together. Don't you see that?
Yeah, yeah.
But the stuff at play at Qui-Gon, the stuff that you and I love digging into. And then Boss Nass doing what's best for his people and coming from a point of view that's probably understandable. Of the Naboo and the treatment of the Gungans, there's a big, giant themes that George is saying, they're seven-year-olds of this generation. Can you pick it up?
Yep. Yep. And I think that's when people talk about The Phantom Menace being made for kids, I think there is a sense of like, yeah, weird whimsy and comedy and even kind of straightforward slapstick. And there's some of that kind of surface level stuff that's obviously important. But I think that it's made for kids is much more for the like, here are some life lessons to really take out into the galaxy with you.
Big ones. And that's why I think over the years, we can poke fun at these films, all three of these films, because some of the moments and even the designs and the look, not even the designs, I take that back, designs, not, but even the look. This scene particularly does not necessarily hold up for me on my TV. I was watching this morning, and I was like, Boss Nass looks like a cartoon.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, look at just a level of animation detail in a video game that's now several years old, like Battlefront 2. And I remember just, like, thinking, like, I can see every pore on these characters' faces.
Yeah.
A video game. And now I just imagine, like, Aiden Versio standing there next to Boss Nass going, are you okay?
100%. Yeah, you see Janina Gavankar's acting decisions in a video game. Yeah, 100%. But that's why I get a little grumpy when you stop at the surface level stuff of the prequels, that's your choice. I'm not here to take that away from it, but this is a great example. So I come back to a great example of dig a little deeper. You might not love it. That's fine. You might not love these movies. I don't think that's ever the end game here at Force Center. We just want to discuss what we think's there. I think you get a lot more from this particular scene than you'll ever have before if you stop and look at it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think much like when we've been discussing the sequels and some of the strong opinions around them lately, art is subjective. And if you don't like things, that's great. I think sometimes what we really want to advocate for is there are really great, consistent, specific ideas here. And mm-hmm. you know, we'd love to have people kind of embrace them and see them. And then they might go, yeah, I see that. Still don't like it. And yeah. That's fine. Our art is subjective. Cool. But we want to dig into those ideas and celebrate that they're there.
Yeah. Yeah. If you come to the table, you listen, you dig, and you're like, this is still not the dinner for me. What can I say? And I'm not here to have us all eat the same dinner.
That's right. That's right. Is pineapple on pizza good? It depends on your mouth. You decide. That's the answer.
And I will fight for my right to enjoy that pizza.
All right. I'd love to see Boss Nass eat a pineapple pizza. Anyway, let's get into this. So there's a lot going on in the scene, but Boss Nass is the boss of the scene. He is, of course, played by Brian Blessed. Are you a fan of his, and were you aware of him in a fan back in 99?
I am. Highlight again our friend Jamie Stangroom's YouTube channel. He's got a great interview with him from a few years back. He is a character, to say the least, and has a lot of Boss Nass in him. His great long career, obviously. I was a fan, but I wasn't immediately a fan. I just didn't know it yet. Like you said up top, Joseph, I quoted Boss Nass. I mimicked Brian Blessed as Boss Nass. I mocked his peace orb at the end of the movie. I still think it's kind of funny. But then I did everything in my power to not admit that I love this character. I'm not crying. I'm kind of got the hiccups today. I apologize, folks. I did everything I could to be like, I don't. But again, the lines, it's charming. It is funny. I love the stuff. I love when he slaps Jar Jar on the back and as he's promoting into a bombad general, he's kind of stumbling along, swaying along. I'm like, you know what? Here it is. I love Boss Nass.
Bombad general. Yeah. Yeah. Brian Blessed is one of the things that I was really looking forward to because I knew him from that first series of Blackadder. In Flash Gordon with his famous dive yell that he does. But he's on a fairly significant to me episode of Doctor Who, King Yurkanos, I believe he plays. But he's just one of those like, how is it that you are doing like textbook overacting, screaming, yeah. but there's still just so much like charm and nuance within it. Like he is just one of those people who just like, you know, defies the rules of how it's supposed to be done, and it works because it's so honest. It's clearly flowing from this weird, wonderful, charming human being that is Brian Blessed. So I think I was excited to see what Brian Blessed was going to do because I knew he was in it. And I think I kind of was like, it made me probably more friendly to Boss Nass because it was like, I mean, that's it's a character for Star Wars, but it's also like, is said. That's what Brian Blessed might be like if he was in Star Wars.
100%. 100%. Yeah. His, I'm even on his Twitter page right now. He's still very active, and he's got all caps. He's doing a great charity thing, Soundless for Nepal, in all caps. Gordon's alive, and so am I. This guy just, he's a lot of things, and it all just poured wonderfully into Boss Nass.
Yeah, yeah. Just scanning his Google entry, and there's a headline from a recent article in The Guardian saying, "I'm only noisy when I choose to be." I look forward to reading that. So Brian, the Brian Blessed of it all is a big part of it for me, of enjoying Boss Nass and the performance. He is certainly a performer that was probably just like, what do you want me to do, George? Cool. Great. Going for it. 130,000%. I'm going for it. What do you think of the design of Boss Nass? We talked a little bit about the CGI and how well Boss Nass has aged or not. But what do you think of just like the design of what he looks like?
Yeah, that's what I wanted to clarify earlier. The design of Boss Nass is in keeping in line with what I feel The Phantom Menace specifically is, which is full of wonderful Star Wars designs. In a world where we've already had Jabba the Hutt, a squid as a, in charge of, calamari in charge of a Rebel Alliance. You and I and so many others grew up with hammerheads and pig faces and all these kind of things. He stands right up there with some of those great designs, if not even more functional in a way. It just makes sense. It's a great design. The costume is great. I would love to see a modern version of Rugor Nass. I really would. in some other does Kenobi go back and visit him in the series? I don't think that'll happen. But I would love to see a modern take on the design with modern technology, because then I think the design would really pop.
Yeah, I agree, because I think the design is really good. I like that he is a different looking Gungan than Jar Jar and many other Gungans. So like you get that sense of just sort of a variety and in diversity within Gungans. I like his kind of brown robe is one of the things that we'll talk about other moments. But there's some kind of connections between the aesthetics of the Gungan High Council and the Jedi, and the brown robe does that. But then he's got like kind of awesome shoulder armor if you really look at it, and then the weird pointy hat and the just powerful powerful eyebrows, right?
Oh yeah.
That when I was looking at him, I think really close for this question, he sort of captures to me a little bit of just like the weird fantasy and fun of Star Wars, because it's just kind of looking at him, it's like, what Boss Nass is reminding me of something. What is it? And I was like, it's a lawn gnome. He's reminding me of a lawn gnome. He's got this energy. Like he's like a rogue lawn gnome that came to life and just started a new life underwater.
Oh, I love that. I love that. I'll never see a lawn gnome the same way again.
That one could be played by Brian Blessed. That would be great.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Any other thoughts on the design of Boss Nass before we move on?
No. I need more Boss Nass merch in my life, but I would love it.
Yeah, and we'll be tracking down a lot of Phantom Menace action figures, I think. Anyway, moving on here. We always like to review of what's going on before the scene and what's coming into the scene with the characters. So Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan Kenobi have discovered the Trade Federation is not just blocking Naboo from interacting with the rest of the galaxy. They are preparing a droid army to invade the planet. The Jedi have been gassed, shot at, and they're on a mission to warn the Naboo it's not their day. Jar Jar Binks has been banished for being clumsy, including blowing things up like a stove in a small submarine. So a very dangerous form of clumsy. And while evading a Trade Federation tank, Qui-Gon pushed Jar Jar out of the way, saving his life. Jar Jar offered to help the Jedi by taking them to the safety of his hidden home, Gunga City, or Oda Gunga. And because of his banishment, Jar Jar and the Jedi are immediately accosted by Captain Tarples, at this point, who takes them to see the bosses. So anything in there? I got a specific question, but I also just want to throw it open to you. Anything in there that you wanted to touch on?
Always a great summary. Qui-Gon's no good, very bad day going on here and sets it up there. And I love, yeah, the highlight of what Jar Jar actually does is one. I always get a kick out of that.
Yeah, when you look up what a Hayblibber is, like, oh, wow, this is actually quite serious.
Yeah.
So why do you think Jar Jar takes them home, even at his own risk?
Yeah, great way to start this, because I just have a sense Jar Jar's, he's cast adrift, man. You know, he's out there. He's just a rolling stone trying to find his way back home. And I just think he doesn't necessarily know where else to go. But also he knows these new friends of his need help. And I think he has a connection and clearly a pride in his community. And I think in a sense, Jar Jar just knows you need help. I can help you. And we, the Gungan people, can help you. So let's do it. Even at the risk of myself getting hurt or punished.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's what I really like about it. And we do learn more about the scene kind of later when he's talking to other people and he's telling Padme about like how he had a brisky morning munchin. that he's having a fine time. Then the Jedi come along and everything goes crazy. But I think that I like the way that it just comes flying out of his mouth, that it I think connects him to Anakin, that he has just this instinct to help. And then once it's already shot out of his mouth of like, if you're trying to go somewhere safe, this is the perfect place. It's great. I have pride in my people and my city and we should go there. I have an instinct to help you. And they're like, right. I do remember that I've been banished and that's going to be problematic at best for me. But that also immediately makes Jar Jar relatable in this kind of this classic underdog way. And there's a lot of connection to him, to early silent comedy. And a lot of early silent comedy is about people in trouble, people who just they're kind of relatable underdogs who are just trying to go through life and get something done. And like they get caught in storms and their pants get caught in things and they trip and people hit them and they accidentally walk by a construction site and they get hit with a plank 8 different ways. And like, that's kind of the comedy of that early silent comedy of a person in trouble who's kind of caught and means well, but keeps getting caught in bad situations. And like, even right away, that's kind of what it is with Jar Jar of like, I have an instinct to help. Whoops. I remember I want to help you, but also it's going to be bad for me. I just don't have any good options in life.
Yeah. Down and out and Oda Gunga.
Down and out and Oda Gunga. That's right. And then, of course, there is also the just kind of straight up Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan press their advantage when like, you know, it's not you might not think it's entirely great for you to go back to your city like you just offered, but it's very dangerous for all of us to stay here, including for you. And that great dialogue about that's the sound of 1,000 terrible things coming your way. So there's a little pressure applied by Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan once he has made the kind offer.
No, and you're right to point that out as kind of the next part of it. And again, we're already starting to dig into the themes. The themes are at play, which are in all the Star Wars movies. Again, early on, you and I talk about even Rise of Skywalker. BB-8's the first to get hurt by Rey, and this theme that rolls out from that, no pun intended, about BB-8. And this is one of those themes, man. Like, yeah, you know, we all need help here. We all need to work together.
We all need help, and poor Jar Jar needs a lot of help. And he has a lot of help to offer. So from there, we're going to dig into the scene itself. It starts with an establishing shot of the throne chamber. We're starting with the actual scene in the chamber. Obviously, there's a beautiful scene of when we first see Oda Gunga, the amazing John Williams music, but we're digging right into that throne chamber scene. So we see an establishing shot of it. It is a circular room with the Jedi in the center, surrounded by Gungan officials and guards, and Jar Jar in the back there with some cuffs on. It is very reminiscent of the Jedi Council chamber later in the film. It's not a full entire circle of leaders around them, but it is the circle of Gungans and authority, and then the Jedi in the middle presenting their case. Why do you think the designs are similar? What does that design tell us?
Here's where I went with this, and sometimes I have a lot of fun of just like, I don't necessarily know the answer, so I'm trying to really dig into Qui-Gon, and it's a preview to me of what's to come. It's Qui-Gon before a council, and he doesn't necessarily like that, and it's insight into his view of meetings, which I respect, his views of authority, at least.
No, I just imagine Qui-Gon very calmly saying, now, I can't teach you, Anakin, but always remember, this could have been an email.
Qui-Gon and me working at most of my jobs, similar vibe at meetings. And it's a preview of Qui-Gon's. And when I say preview, I don't want to overstep this scene. We're not looking past this scene, but it really sets the tone for Qui-Gon. It's a character builder for his view on authority and perhaps authority that doesn't get it or doesn't want to go his way, and he's not afraid to say, not afraid to clearly use some powers we'll talk about. But he does it all for the greater good of what I think he believes is the greater good, and we really like and enjoy Qui-Gon's philosophies and views on what the good and the light side is. So that's where it's not necessarily like George was like, well, I need to set this up. But this is just probably what Qui-Gon's been running into his entire career. And it's just another chapter in this that's frustrating for him.
Yeah, no, I think we're really on the same page. I think one of the things that I've come to really love about Phantom Menace and its design, you know, not only does it just expand the palette of what Star Wars can look like, and it's showing us a different world than we saw in the original trilogy. We are mostly spending times with leaders and beautiful, powerful places that are kept up and all that. But there's also just this absolutely recurring image of circles and rounded objects. There's a flow in it's, to me, it's just visually saying in a way that you can kind of just feel in your gut that there's problems. There's a Phantom Menace. There's conflict in this movie, but this is a time in the galaxy that had a little bit of harmony. All those rounded images reminds us of connections, the sort of natural circles of life, of events potentially repeating themselves. All that sort of imagery of circles and rounded objects is really powerful to me. And this is just yet another one of them. And it's in fact the entire image of Otagunga, right? It's they live in these beautiful circular orbs, right?
They absolutely do. And I want to kick this back to you here. And I'm not being cheeky with this question, because when you and I first met and we had our earlier discussions on Jedi Alliance, the prequels, this is one of the first points you ever said, you said that I remember thinking, hot damn naps, like you missed that. You didn't pay attention to that. When was the first time that really sunk in? Was it the first screenings? You're so great with themes, man. You pull out these wonderful themes, and the themes are even in the designs, and that's not something George would overlook. When did you discover that? When did you hit into that?
I think I started thinking about that a while after initially watching the film, because like I said, I was caught up in the surface of, does it feel like Star Wars? Like the N1 is the new Naboo Starfighter is really different, feels really cool, but like, yeah. And Boss Nass is weird and fun, Brian Blessed, but does he look like Star Wars? Like, I was so distracted by that stuff, and
same.
I think for me, probably like late 2000s, when I was, where I'd watch them on DVD every once in a while, and I had long ago let go, like, is it good, is it bad, who cares, I'm drawn to it, and I rewatch this film, and I'll sit around and talk to people about, yeah, it should have been this, it should have been that, but I watch them and I enjoy them. And I think once I really started saying, okay, well, stop thinking about what it should have been, what's there, why, and realizing that real circular connection and going like, well, what does that make me feel and why? And why would it be there? And how does it match what the characters are doing and saying,
Yeah, no, beautiful stuff. Because again, we got Obi-Wan in this scene, just kind of almost, he's so frustrated. He's a little young, frustrated Obi-Wan, just kind of explicitly stating what's going on here. But then to feel it and think it's about the era and people not working together, not coming together, could undercut this era. It's all in the design. It's all at stake. It's all present there. And I've always loved that. And this scene really makes that pop for me, just the circular nature of what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. And I really agree with what you're saying about, it's not even that it's a preview of what Qui-Gon is going to face with the Jedi Council. I think it is, and we're going to talk about that a little bit explicitly. But there is something about this image of the characters that are sort of coded, particularly Qui-Gon, to be a wise person, a noble person, a person on a mission, a person who knows what's going on. Of like this, this invasion is coming. Even Qui-Gon thought earlier, like these Federation types are cowards. This will be quick and easy. And like, whoa, no, there's a real problem. There's a big problem, and I have the responsibility of trying to address it by passing that knowledge on. So he's coded as like wise and knowledgeable. And here he is being blocked by this sort of symbol of authority. I have to stand here in front of the bureaucrats and explain. And it's not just that it happens to Qui-Gon here. It happens to Qui-Gon again from his perspective in front of the council. Of like, I really discovered something with Anakin. It's really important. I really believe my gut. I really believe this is important. But I got to sell it to a council. This is Padme in front of the Senate. Like, our planet's been invaded, and I've got to sell it to this group of bureaucrats, this council. Like, it's like all the sort of the circular symbolism is sort of like what should be, what can be, but often what's happening in it is rigidity. And I see it as like, that's Qui-Gon in front of the Gungan Council, Qui-Gon in front of the Jedi Council, Padme in front of the Senate. This is George Lucas in front of the Directors Guild. When they didn't want him to put the Irvin Kershner's credit at the end of the movie, because that's not the way it's done, you know? And that's just, and then obviously I think there's a lot of political beliefs from Lucas that he champions the small group who is trying to do something wise and flowing, but they're caught up in the machinery of rigidity and bureaucracy. But obviously he's just experienced that in his own personal life with things like the Directors Guild yelling at him for not crediting a director in this very specific rigid way. So it's not only like telling to the story of Star Wars that it's a symbol of facing authority that reoccurs again and again in this film. It matters to the story, and you can kind of see where it might have come from in real life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. George? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Any other thoughts before we move on?
Many. Let's move on.
Okay, great. So the dialogue begins. Boss Nass makes a noise. The subtitles render on Disney Plus is tick, 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 tick. he then says, Yusa cannot bees here. This army of mechaniques up there is Nuisaw. Now, I always heard it as Nuisa, the same way they would say like Misa. But the credits or the subtitles say, Yusa cannot bees here. This army of mechaniques up there is Nuisong. So up for interpretation. The subtitles also say, Yusa cannot bees hair, which I don't think is correct. Anyway, so wanted to obviously that is just that line of dialogue is exactly what Jar Jar has warned them, is they're not super big on outsiders. So this is going to be an uphill negotiation. But what I wanted to talk about right away is just what you think of Boss Nass's speech pattern. It is similar to Jar Jar, obviously. Boss Nass is in some ways even more extreme. You know, it's part noises, part words we recognize and basic, part cognates that are like, that's not the exact word, but we absolutely know the English or basic equivalent. A part of it is just who knows what he's saying. What does that communicate that he speaks like that? How do you feel beyond just like the flavor and the fun of it? What's its value? What do you feel about it?
We've just met Jar Jar. You and I and many others are in the theater going, did he just say squeeze me? That guy just said squeeze me. So we're dealing with that kind of stuff. And yes, there's also some other elements of the Gungan, but specifically Jar Jar accent that I know have been discussed and are problematic in some ways. And that's a part of a bigger discussion. But to follow Jar Jar up with this, Boss Nass, and the tick, 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 and all those things, it's such a its culture, of its people, and it just expanded what I just seen with Jar Jar, and then we get Captain Tarples too. Now seems even more real, seems purposeful, and it seems like they are what they are saying: a proud people, a proud society, and very their own. And that this is the Qui-Gon running up against that, and Obi-Wan running up against that, and that they have to. Qui-Gon, he has to learn to communicate, learn to understand, literally, figuratively, all through the scene. They can't rely on what they just know. They must learn Boss Nass in a short amount of time because the communication isn't necessarily direct. And it's one of the of all the times. Like I still sometimes wish Lady Proxima was translated and wasn't the great Linda Hunt doing basic. That's a big one for me. But this is one of those moments where an alien creature having the basic language, it really works for me, even more than Jar Jar. It works for me. It makes sense. Him even kind of struggling with the translation drives home the differences between the Naboo and the Gungans, and then Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan are running up against that how you say punish. There's that kind of thing kind of inferred into it for me. So therefore, it's the divide that needs to be crossed in a way.
Oh, yeah. No, I really like it. I really like what you're saying. I think there definitely is. There's a lot in Phantom Menace, but a lot with the Gungans and with Jar Jar that is absolutely worthy of discussion. A lot of those discussions have been had. I think there's a lot in Star Wars of, you know, different groups? How are they coded to different real world groups in terms of their level of technology and their level of status and, you know, what is being said, what is maybe accidentally sometimes being picked up from the pulp and adventure serial origins of Star Wars and being transferred? All that stuff is great and important stuff to acknowledge that those conversations are out there and to seek them out. Setting that aside from a moment, yeah, I really like that it has a relationship to Naboo, who yeah. speak basic, but then there's also like clearly their own culture and norms. So you get like this sense of communities that maybe, you know, a long, long time ago were in sync because they have commonalities, but they're not anymore. And they've diverged, you know, is one way I see it. I really like that it does make it feel different and unique in like it's its own culture. It's the promise of Star Wars of, you know, beings from a thousand worlds. So it makes it feel like different and fantastic and fun, but without the subtitles. So it is still accessible to young kids.
Yeah, which is something you have to be aware of, right? When you're putting this together. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's always a weird line, you know. I'm glad Jabba doesn't say, you know, hey, Han, what's up, buddy? Like, I'm glad that's not the case. But I like the Bib Fortunas that are translated. Like, yeah, it works. And Boss Nass, that just really works for me.
Yeah, and this is something where Lucas does make different choices throughout the years of when to subtitle and when not to subtitle. But, you know, taking him at his sort of creative word that the Phantom Menace was very much keeping in mind of kids watching this, that is a part of it. I also like, for me, that there is room to just intuit, like, what does tick, tick, tick mean? Like, I think we all kind of get the mood of what that means.
Yeah.
It seems like hello, I'm not happy you're here.
There's a little frustration through it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Is it something that is, that's a common, that's a greeting that the leader says? Is that just, that's Boss Nass's thing? You know, like, yeah. I like that there is room to wonder. There's room to dream on that one.
Yeah. Yeah. There might be a little bit of a tick or something going on. I don't know. But when it pops back up, I just, it's almost like he's like swallowing hard. So you know, we got to deal with this. Yeah. There's a little bit of that I've inferred it, which is again, part of the point, because even you writing this down, taking the direct translation for the subtitles, I've always taken it. Disarmy of Mechanex up there is new. We saw, like, I thought he was saying it's you for years.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, which doesn't really factor much into my discussion here today, but like, you know, there was part of me of him play, like, you're all the same. Naboo, you, whatever. And you brought the problems here, which is makes some sense too for me, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. In Mechaniques, that word that's like, very clear what it is to me has always been clear. It's like, I've always liked that word. So I love old Mechaniques.
Yes.
So Qui-Gon responds, a droid army is about to attack the Naboo. We must warn them. Boss Nass counters, we know like a Naboo, tick, tick, tick again. The Naboo think they so smarty. They think they brain so big. Yes. So is this an important moment to you that Boss Nass clearly communicates not only his displeasure with the Naboo, but kind of why he is not a fan of the Naboo? Is this an important moment to you and why?
I think it's a very important moment. But there's a shot prior to this you touched upon a little bit, but when we're going, it's a great shot from the trailer, or one of the trailers, right? Jar Jar swimming and you see the city, and it's a beautiful Star Wars shot. I don't ever want to overlook that. But also, it just sets up as really great, as a fan, for me, it was a really great appreciation of this culture we're going to. We just met Jar Jar. You might be having some Jar Jar issues, but here's where he comes from. Here's who he is. And you've already seen and got maybe a sense, even from the trailers and previews and publications getting us ready for the film, you got a sense of Naboo and Padme or Amidala. And, you know, you appreciate the culture of Naboo right away, but the Gungans are there too, and we're just seeing this wonderful shot of their city. And here's Boss Nass going, no, I don't care. Look, we're separated for a reason. The way they've treated us, I think it's really big stuff. And Qui-Gon is he's frustrated up top, right? Don't you get that feeling if he's just like, a droid army is about to attack the Naboo, but we must warn them. That's what we have to do.
Yes, he's on a mission.
Yeah. And Boss Nass is like, ain't no thing for us, man. We're going to be just fine, and they might deserve it.
Yeah. Yeah. This is great. Yeah, I think it establishes two cultures with baggage, right?
Yes.
Because there can be a story of cultures not getting along, or one culture being cruel to another, because they don't know one another. They don't understand each other. It's the fear of the unknown. This doesn't have that baggage to it. This has the, we know each other. We don't like each other. They think they are better than us. Look at our awesome city with our awesome tech. We are not less than, and those land bastards think we are less than, you know?
Yeah.
That tells a real story of, like, I think what's very important about that and what is table setting to the story and, you know, the plot and the actual story, the themes of Phantom Menace is these are cultures who have every reason not to work together. There has been problems, and this is not just an easy fix that we're going to see happen, you know? So it sets up the Gungans and the Naboo to really get past these problems and follow Shmi's wisdom of no one in the universe helps each other.
Right. Yeah. And it's a big moment later on. And we keep coming to that. I mean, maybe eventually we'll do scene by scene part two on this with the Jar Jar and Padme scene. Yusa said people going to die can get mocked all to the ends of time. It's still an important scene because Padme realizes she cannot save her people until she sees her planet as one, right? It's pretty explicit. And whereas Boss Nass has a right to be upset, we don't know the exact history. We're not here to exactly translate it to real world situations and real world histories. It touches on that stuff, to be clear. But so we're talking about the Naboo and the Gungans right now. I also think Boss Nass might have been maybe a little bit wrong to isolate. We don't know the whole story there, but it's why it's important for the Queen to not just go, all right, guess what? Change of plans. We're all on the same team. She has to make amends for it. She has to acknowledge who they are. And I think that's a powerful moment too. And all that stems from what we're talking about here. All the things later on, the Phantom Menace, all the great things I think Padme does, all the great things the Gungans and the sacrifices they make and the starting up of the shields all goes back to exactly this line that you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. It starts the journey of, we have a problem with the Naboo because they're a culture that thinks they're better than us. And here's the Naboo queen literally saying, I'm not better than you. In fact, I would love to work with you. I need your help. And I want us to work together. And I don't think that we are better than you is, you know, that journey gets set up here.
Yeah. And it's a brave moment for Padme, a 14-year-old queen going, I must change who knows how long of problems in this relationship between our cultures.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a powerful thing to have that, that idea be expressed by Anakin as Shmi's wisdom and see it expressed in lots of different macro and micro versions throughout the film.
Yeah.
So Obi-Wan responds, once those droids take control of the surface, they will take control of you. Boss Nass says, Misa no think so, they not know of usin. Then Obi-Wan says, the big line, you and the Naboo form a symbiont circle. What happens to one of you will affect the other. You must understand this. I've always loved that line. I'm so excited to talk about this line. two questions here, Ken. What's the importance of this idea that Obi-Wan is communicating it? And what does it tell us that Obi-Wan is the person saying it?
It tells that he's got a good handle on points of view and how they need to change. No. This is to me, it's, I don't want to say the theme of the movie, but it's what's going on here, right? It's so directly stated. It's what George is putting into this, and this carries all the way out. And I think you and I are of the opinion that this tracks all the way to the Battle of Exegol. More of us Poe. There's more of us Poe. You and I have talked a lot about that lately there. So that's why I think this scene this moment is very important. And again, I love, there's a little bit of frustration in Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan, but now Obi-Wan's, he's got a little heat. He's got a little heat behind the line. You must understand this.
I totally agree. I think this is a really powerful line to just be explicit. Symbiont definition in our Earth world is an organism living in symbiosis with another. It is obviously an idea that's living with the explanation of midichlorians. Midichlorians, I think, are a way to continue this same idea of every being is being assisted by other beings in every way, on down to the cellular level, to the practical level, to the interpersonal one-on-one level, to the larger society level. It's like kind of, it's taking this idea of empathy and connection and helping one another and showing it on the societal level here the interpersonal level with Anakin, and then like the cellular level with the midichlorians. It's like a very important idea. I do think it is about empathy. I think it's about being willing to understand others and say, I don't think I'm better than you. I think we can work together. I think we can work this out, trying to understand where other people are coming from. But I think what's really powerful about this Gungan Naboo relationship that gets set up here is it's taking this argument that's all through Star Wars that we're all connected. The force is everywhere. We're luminous. We all live together. And it's making this real specific argument with the Gungan and the Naboo that helping others isn't just like, yeah, you should do that. It's selfless. It's great. Help others. It's right. Making the argument that helping others is also helping yourself. Mm-hmm. That the galaxy is not a zero-sum, winner-takes-all game. That if we all work to better everyone, things will be better for everyone. Not if you help someone else, that means you are automatically losing something yourself. Because it's a circle.
Rising tides help all the bongos? Is that?
Yes. That's the short way to say what I was trying to say.
Before we get into the Obi-Wan of it all, in terms of Obi-Wan is the person saying it. I have a thought. I don't know. I don't know if this is right. I'm asking you, President of Force Center Obi-Wan expert here. I love because Obi-Wan believes all this. He knows it's true, and he knows it's true in theory. But I love that Obi-Wan several times, even already with Jar Jar, he's got a. Well, what's this person going to do to help us?
who's this? A local, says Qui-Gon. Yeah, and have you picked up another pathetic life form? Obi-Wan is quite salty. Yes.
Yeah, I'm not criticizing Obi-Wan, you know, but it's like he's the younger one here, so it's like along the way, has he got to apply some of the knowledge he has? Just a random thought. I don't think necessarily. I don't know. I don't want to go too far.
I agree with you. I think that's what is interesting to me. I love Obi-Wan. I love him because he's flawed, and I love him because we get to see him grow. And he starts out like he is this young guy who's ready to be a Jedi. He's ready to prove himself. And what he's saying is, accurate to the philosophy of the Jedi. It is accurate to the actual functioning of societies and Obi-Wan's opinion. But it does come across as really just youthful and haughty. And it comes off to me as, I studied this in the Jedi Temple since I was 3. It's obvious. Everyone knows that cultures living together on planets form symbiont circles. And you can't just say, whatever happens to that part of the planet won't affect me. Yes, it will. This is just basic stuff. This is 2 + 2 = 4. Come on, Boss Nass. So yeah, on one hand, he's saying something like beautiful and true that I think the film argues for. But he's saying it from this youthful perspective of, it's obvious to me because I know it. Why doesn't everybody know this?
Yeah. Yeah. And then from there, how do you not just get them to know, but how do you work with them?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that difference between the, I'll go to your baseball coaching, right? It's one mm-hmm. thing to tell somebody, it's another thing to help them experience it themselves. So they learn and experience it, you know? And I love that it's Obi-Wan just being like, come on, did you not read the homework? mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Boss Nass is not buying what Obi-Wan's selling. He reiterates, we so know Karen about the Naboo. Qui-Gon changes the subject with a light little Jedi mind trick, waving his hand and saying, then speed us on our way. Boss Nass responds, we's are going to speed you away. So what is your thought here? Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan's trying to kind of engage him in a, if not philosophical debate, Obi-Wan's trying to tell him philosophy that Boss Nass should agree with. It's clear he's not going to because Boss Nass just reiterates that he doesn't like the Naboo, period. And so Qui-Gon changes the subject with a Jedi mind trick. What's the morality here? What are your Qui-Gon thoughts?
Oh, man, we just did that Qui-Gon episode and we know him using the mind trick later on with Watu. People have opinions on it. Yeah, we understand in some text, Watu had some weighted dice, and all that to me goes to what I said a little bit earlier of Qui-Gon aiming towards the greater good for you Hot Fuzz fans. It is this idea that he knows, all caps knows, Boss Nass is a dead end right now. Could they deal with it some other time? Do they need to deal with it? As far as he knows, he just needs to get to his next part of the mission, right? He doesn't understand it. He doesn't know Anakin's coming down the pipeline yet. He doesn't know any of that. But Qui-Gon's tied into going towards the light, as we know. And if there's a dead end, I think he's going to do things for the greater good. You were saying some George Lucas stuff earlier. I don't have time to look up the specific story, but do you remember the tale? And I'm sure I'm paraphrasing a lot of a long time ago. George wanted to build some low income housing, and folks in the neighborhood maybe a little bit too high, mighty, and snooty for it. And so George just started like doing it, like buying land and doing it, and I'm summarizing a story that I kind of remember in the back of my mind. I think there's a little bit of George in a way, just going, all right. This is for the greater good. You're not on board. Awesome. Mind trick. Get us on our way. It's my interpretation.
Beat us on our way. Yeah. Yes. Boy. You know, I think a lot of us have probably found ourselves in meetings or in front of a council. Like, we've been given an assignment to fix a problem, and then you're not getting anywhere. Well, then just speed me on my way and let me try to take care of the problem. I think that's absolutely what's going on here. I think it's a great difference between Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan, where Obi-Wan's like, well, let me engage you on this sort of a philosophical debate and try to get you to see it, from what Obi-Wan thinks in that moment is the right way. And Qui-Gon's like, yeah, no, we're not going to change his mind right now. Yeah. We have something to do. I have stood in front of rigid authority that I need to get past in order to help people immediately. Those droids are coming. I need to save people by warning the Naboo about the attack. I don't have the time to try to change the mind of rigid authority right now. I think that's what's going on.
And he knows he can. I would love to see he and Mace and Yoda get into a mind trick battle later on. It's not going to happen there. He knows. But even what does he do up there? Like, you can't train Anakin. All right, cool. Hey, so I'm going to train Anakin.
Great. Then speed us on our way.
Yeah.
I'm going to start using that one in day to day life. You want to do it that way? I have valid concerns. Speed us on our way. All right. So Qui-Gon gets practical with another Jedi mind trick wave as he says, we could use a transport. And Boss Nass says, we give you una bongo. Jar Jar in handcuffs is alarmed, saying, hmm? Boss Nass finishes by saying in a massively menacing voice, the speediest way to Naboo is going through the planet core. And then getting as low as possible, now go.
Yes. Excellent.
Is this Boss Nass's best line, Ken?
I think there's some other great lines that even follow the Punish one. I just love the take on that one. This is the one. And yeah, back Mod Garrett and I could make each other laugh instantly just doing the same Planet Core on and off air. So I'm just real partial to this line. I love it. But it's like Nass saying, yeah, he may have had a little mind trick on him, but I think Nass is playing the game. We're in a chess game now.
Okay. Peace. Yeah. We've entered the chess game.
Yeah. We have entered the great game now. And I think he's probably I think the mind trick worked away. I'm not saying Nass was like Watto, like that doesn't work on me, but I think a little bit of there, but he doesn't care. Nass, this is his way. He's using speed us on our way in his own way. Get out of here.
Obviously, he literally means go through the planet core, but are you saying that in Gungan society, this is kind of a way to say, well, then F off. Like, all right, you know what? Then just go through the planet core.
You're not supposed to be here. You want me to make peace with these people who don't like us, don't value us. You want me to put my culture, my people, my army in danger. And all it takes... It's that movie, was it a Boy's Life? He owes me $20. You'll never see him again. The $20 is the cost to get him out of your life. Una bongo is the cost to get these two interlopers out of his life. Good.
Yes.
And going through the planet core is kind of like that. Just head the planet course real quick. Just take the road. You'll die on the way. But don't worry about that. And that's me. Why Jar Jar is like, he's starting to realize that the setup is going. And that's the way I interpret the scene. It might just be mine. And Qui-Gon's like, great. Whether he's fully aware it's a trap or not, I don't think he cares at this point. And I think that's why I love this line. There's a lot in that. And it's just a fun line. And then it's the buck stop. Get out of here. Now go. Conversation over.
Yeah, conversation over for sure. And we'll dive a little bit more into that Jedi mind trick because I want to pick your brain a little bit. I'm very curious about the effect level of the Jedi mind trick in your mind. But yeah, the spirit of it is very clear. Of I've said what I've had to say. You got to go now, and the way you're going's not going to be fun, buddy. Yeah. So it's the delivery of Planet Core. And I think I've always been like, ah, this is a weird fish guy. Now he reminds me of a lawn gnome, and suddenly he's speaking like a vampire. That line has always had like a vampire vibe to me. I don't know why, but I'd love it. I expect Dracula to turn to the screen and say Planet Core. I also just love it because the Phantom Menace has its mind on all of these big themes in this philosophy of empathy and connection and helping one another. Rising tides lift all bongos, as you said. But it's also like very much attached to that spirit of adventure serial and what adventure is next. In the Planet Core and the underlining of the utter doom, right, is such a big part of this, of like, hey, this is a conversation, but guess what, everybody? Another, you know, adventure serial challenge is coming up in a moment. The Planet Core is not a happy place. It's going to be real exciting when those Jedi go through.
Oh, man, it's such a 50s sci-fi thing, right? We got to go through the Planet Core? What?
Yeah, and it's also just one of those places where Star Wars is like, science, not our concern.
Yeah.
TIE fighters make noises in space. This planet's core is water. Good. That's the way it is. Enjoy Star Wars.
There it is.
And he speeds them on their way. Qui-Gon says, thank you for your help. We leave in peace, with a little bow. And with that, we are going to leave in peace for a moment. We're going to take a short break, and we will be back to finish our discussion of Boss Nass's Throne of Judgment.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, 4Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
And we are back into Boss Nass's Throne of Judgment. So Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon are now turning to leave. Obi-Wan asks, Master, what's a bongo? Qui-Gon answers, a transport, I hope. Very Jedi, very going with the flow. Jar Jar leans forward and says, Daisa setting you up, going through the planet core is bad bombing. So this is where I want to really dig in, Ken. Qui-Gon did the mind trick for a transport in particular. Well, just for letting them go, and then for specifically, and give us a transport. And so Boss Nass does the normal Jedi mind trick of I repeat exactly what you said. And then he adds a bunch of terrifying sounding things in a way that he says it in a way that is clearly meant to intimidate the Jedi. So does that make you feel like the mind trick actually worked, only half worked? Is Boss Nass sacrificing a bongo on purpose, hoping that these pushy outsiders will be devoured in the planet core?
Yeah, I mean, clearly I was so excited about this. I charged ahead of my Boss Nass thoughts. I think, and I'm going back to, in 99, I took it all as, I think I was right. I think it worked, number one, because it that's the indication that it worked, right? That he repeats it back. That's
yeah.
Learned all the way back in New Hope, so I have no doubts there. And then I just thought, I kind of thought back in 99 that he was like, oh, he's not a bad guy. He's helping him. He doesn't know that there's three giant monsters there that made him. But now clearly he knows. And clearly Jar Jar knows and all this stuff. So I think it's a little column A, little column B situation here. I would love to know the effects. And I'm not talking about in some book explaining it. I would love to talk to someone who's had a force mind trick used on them. Is that possible?
Yeah. Yeah. Because
is it cloudy? Is it foggy? Do you realize you did it? Does the sentence end and you go, whoa, I said that, which we've all, you know, podcast enough in time in your life or just during a week, you suddenly find yourself in a paragraph you didn't know you started. That happens. And does he emerge or does he, is he palpitating a little bit where sometimes the plan goes awry, but then you adjust and you're like, oh, okay, they want a bongo. Oh, that's perfect. Send him to the planet core. I don't know the answer. I think that from my interpretation, that's what happens. He falls for it, but then he's like, all right, all things considered, it's a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, it seems like the Gungans are aware of the Force and maybe Boss Nass is aware of Jedi. Maybe he's interacted with them before and they've been around a long time. Maybe he's a little bit aware of mind tricks. I think it works, but I don't think it fully works. Like there seems to be levels to Jedi mind tricks, which makes sense to me, right? Of like there's a just reach in, as we see like in the sequel, of like in just invasively take what you want, right? There's kind of that impression that Rey did a real strong one on those two First Order troops, where they're like not just saying the thing that she wants them to believe, but they're like yes anding it and saying like and it's great that you're here, right?
Yeah,
there's something about Qui-Gon's is just like, I really don't have time for a pushback. So I'm kind of going to say what I mean, and I'm just going to give it a little extra push.
Yeah.
With the mind trick. And I like the idea that it's like, yeah, no, Boss Nass feels compelled. Like, yeah, no, I'm going to give you a transport. But I'm also going to send you the most dangerous way, and I'm glad. And I tend to believe Jar Jar that Nass is setting him up, you know?
100%. It's funny, you made me think of that moment in Rise of Skywalker. There's a couple moments with Rey, right? But I love that Poe and Finn have that little beat of like, does she do that to us? It's a fair question to ask, which puts the power of mind control, the morality of it does rest on the shoulders of those using it. It's a big thing, right? And I know we've seen some of that in the High Republic of the early days of kind of using that in a way.
Yeah, yeah, and different names for it to wrestle with the level of morality. Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. But it definitely does seem like when Boss Nass says Planet Core, he is entirely aware that he is sending them somewhere dangerous, or else he should really reconsider how he says Planet Core. One or the other.
It's true.
So after this warning from Jar Jar that they are being set up and that going through the Planet Core is bad bombing, Jar Jar asks for help, saying, any help here would be hot, showing his shackles. Qui-Gon turns, and Obi-Wan's not thrilled seeing that Qui-Gon is turning to engage. Obi-Wan says, Master, we are short on time. Qui-Gon responds, we'll need a navigator to get us through the planet's core. This Gungan may be of help. So what's the importance of this moment for you? What's the significance that Qui-Gon is turning to get help from someone, and the significance that so much of the scene is really starting to echo Qui-Gon's relationship with Anakin later in the film?
Yeah, I mean, you almost feel like Qui-Gon also, he says, we'll need a navigator to get us through the planet's core. This Gungan may have be of help. You see, Obi-Wan, we're all a symbiotic circle. it's a little bit of that. Again, I'm not here to, you know, we're not here to hammer on Obi-Wan and his shortcomings. He's one of the greatest characters, but this is an early version of him. He's learning the lessons and he's seeing it in play. And I think Qui-Gon's got a handle of that. And I think it's very important. It's just, again, setting up the theme of Qui-Gon's going to be open to this stuff. I think other Jedi would not, maybe even Obi-Wan himself, if it's just him running into the Skywalker family on Mos Espa, like, would he have been open to even the possibility of connecting with all living beings in the galaxy and seeing their purpose and seeing their worth? It's a pretty big thing. And it's a big thing. You know, it's what you want out of the Jedi, right? You would think. And all living things have a part to play in the story. And Qui-Gon's very aware of that. And it starts here. Is it a little tit for tat? Is it a little bit of like, I'll help you, you help me? Yeah, that's fine. But that's the point a little bit here. All rising tides and bongos. And
exactly. Yeah, no, I think it is just a great demonstration of Qui-Gon having empathy. And not in this like, I now want to be Jar Jar's best friend. You know, he still seems annoyed by Jar Jar.
He very much so. Yeah.
Like, oh, very much so. This guy's clumsy, loud. He definitely reacts to everything with fear. That is not Qui-Gon's thing. He's got a lot of important stuff to do. So it almost makes the empathy even more powerful to me of like, Qui-Gon does seem annoyed by Jar Jar and does have concerns about Jar Jar, but it is such an animating belief, it seems, from Qui-Gon that everyone's equal in the Force, anyone can have value. And on the surface, Jar Jar it does not seem super valuable. He seems, in fact, maybe a lot to handle and maybe that he would cause problems, the way Obi-Wan is kind of seeing him. But Qui-Gon is just so enmeshed in, like, see, everyone is having value, you know?
Yeah.
And that picture of Jar Jar that then really extends the Gungans, which then translates to the Ewoks, which then translates to the sort of chain of empathy and kindness and everyone has value that's so important in Rise of Skywalker. It's just a really important moment of this person, Jar Jar, we've found ourselves together. We're already in this cycle of helping one another. He got in my way. I saved him. And then he helped us by bringing us to this city, and now he needs help, and maybe if I help him here, he'll be able to help us again. It's just really this this commitment to empathy. We're all connected. Everyone has value. Let's help each other.
Yeah, and I love that it's not easy for Qui-Gon in a way, right? Even their meeting was such a boom, get out of the way. And that if Qui-Gon's tuned into the Force and they're like, he's got it. This guy, he's still helping us. It's still important. There's something going on here. I can't ignore it. And he looks like he was prepared to leave him there. Right. I mean, but then realizing, wait, something's happening. Something's calling. And I love that it's not easy. Qui-Gon's not, hey, my new best bud. I love hanging out with you. And how that reflects how a little lesson again for Obi-Wan, only because this is Padawan Kenobi that we're talking about here. We know at the end of the day, he's not super thrilled with the Anakin thing, right? He's doing it. And that's a little bit of their relationship, Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon's relationship. We know it's strained at times, but we don't really learn that till way later on in 1989. We're just taking it as face value. So I like that practice what you preach. And it's not always easy.
Yeah, and Qui-Gon is really teaching by demonstrating, and I can have some empathy for Obi-Wan of like he's got this bond with his master, he's really wanting to impress and please his master and move on to the Jedi trials, and every time they go on a mission, Qui-Gon's just getting a bunch of other from Obi-Wan's perspective annoying weirdos to go with them. Like here we go again.
Yeah. It's fascinating. The Padawan Kenobi is an interesting character for a lot of reasons.
Absolutely. And then what I like is, unless it happens off screen, Jar Jar is mostly distracting and annoying on the actual trip to the planet core. And they, in fact, even have a debate about like, the Force is going to help us through. And just Maxi Big to Force. So I like that. Qui-Gon's like, he might help us with the navigation. Yeah, not really. But, you know, he's a creature under my care. He's a person under my care.
Yeah,
he has value. He's formed this bond with me. We'll play this out. And he, of course, ends up having massive value in changing everything because he brings Padme and the Gungans together.
Yeah.
So Qui-Gon, making these decisions, returns to the speaking circle. Back to the authority and asks, what is to become of Jar Jar Binks here? Boss Nass says, hissing to be punished. And a big, big, nasty smile.
It's not a good smile.
It is not a good smile. That is he is the Gungan who stole Christmas right there, right?
He is. So good. Watching this morning over a cup of coffee, I was like, he is happy. Punished. A nice word for what they're about to do with Jar Jar.
Jar Jar hangs his head and groans. Oh, so we've talked about a lot of nice things about how this film is for children. It teaches wonderful values of empathy and connection. What awful thing is going to happen to Jar Jar? What are we talking about here?
I don't want to make light of it. I mean, I think there's some physical pain involved. I think there's imprisonment. I don't know. I've been watching Ocean's 11, 12, and 13 recently. I've just been on a kick with those Soderbergh remakes, the remake of Ocean 11. And I just think of Terry Benedict of just like, oh, he doesn't just get you. He gets your family. He'll bankrupt your cousin's mattress business. Like, I'm just like, Boss Nass to me, it's I don't know. I'm also thinking of Alec Baldwin in The Cooler. Like, what are you doing behind the closed doors? Tarples, turn off the cameras. I don't think it's good. And I think it's not just physical. I do think there's some incarceration, some stripping of family rights or inherited. There's something going on with Jar Jar. It's bad. It's bad stuff.
Yeah. It is certainly portrayed as not great. I'm extrapolating. I'm doing some headcanon here. It seems like Gungans like to test character by forcing dangerous positions on people. Like even when Boss Nass is in theory happy with Jar Jar that he brought the Naboo and the Gungans together, he rewards him by making him a bombad general, and without much training that we're aware of, giving him a chance to prove himself on the battlefield.
I mean, the position wasn't made available for HR to interview a lot of candidates, just in the field, no qualifications.
And if that's Boss Nass rewarding Jar Jar, what is he going to do when he's punishing Jar Jar, right? Like, I wonder, to me, it's like my headcanon is like, there are many dangerous things that are needed to maintain the beautiful city of Otagunga, that there's like, go down and fix this exposed wire in the water. Why don't you do that, Jar Jar? Like, that they just give him dangerous tasks. And maybe if he accomplishes them without, you know, horrific injury, then he will slowly work his way back into society, but it's not going to be good.
Yeah, whatever the Gungan equivalent of Spice Mines of Kessel type of punishments, going on here. Could be it. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. A fun mystery of how awful the punishment is. So Qui-Gon tells Boss Nass, I saved his life. He owes me what you call a life debt. Qui-Gon throws out another little Jedi mind trick hand wave and says, your gods demand that his life belongs to me now. So I will point out that he is quoting Jar Jar. When they meet, Jar Jar says, Misa, your humble servant. Qui-Gon says, won't be necessary. And then Jar Jar says, tis demanded by the gods it is. So Qui-Gon is listening to Jar Jar. This is not a thing he's making up in the moment. Mm-hmm. But still, he's talking about what the Gungan's gods demand in their society and doing it with a little mind trick. Is Qui-Gon respecting the Gungans here?
To be determined. I think it shows an understanding. Like you said, it shows that he's listened. Because we don't, correct me if I'm wrong, we don't hear Jar Jar say life debt, do we? Or do we not?
No, but in Boss Nass's response, they do have a word for it. So it does seem like Qui-Gon has interpreted what Jar Jar said correctly.
Right. He having the life play indeed. So, okay. Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's Qui-Gon. He's not trying to overpower him, you know, subtle force trick, maybe aside, we can talk about that, but he's trying to show an understanding. He's trying to show respect, but again, speed me on my way, man. Like, come on. If you want to fight the Mechaniks, someone's going to have to.
Yeah, the Mechaniks are coming. I got to go. I got to warn the Naboo. I don't think they're so smarty. I don't think their brains are that big. I need to warn them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think it really is it's such a weird mix because he's helping Jar Jar, listening to the fact that, you know, he's going to be punished. And respecting that Jar Jar said, hey, this is the deal in my culture. You saved my life. I owe you. So in one way, he's just like being very respectful. But by throwing in the hand wave is a little pushy. But, you know, I think that's maybe the Qui-Gon we're seeing of like I'm Qui-Gon in the early half of the movie before he kind of has this awakening, I think, by it's subtle. But to me, this awakening of attitude when he encounters Anakin.
Mm-hmm.
That there is a real like, oh, man, I am tired of this galaxy and I'm tired of running into the same damn problems and I gotta go. Speed me on my way, damn it.
I think I've always taken from Qui-Gon, and this is before a lot of supplemental canon material came up to just kind of expand this idea of who Qui-Gon is, but it's heavier, it's spiritual, but I've always taken a little bit of Qui-Gon just going, how many days do I retire? So tired of this, but he's always going to push towards the greater good and towards the light. So he's still going to do his job.
Yeah. Yeah. So he just, he's respectful with a push.
Yeah. But to
which
your point,
I think is open to interpretation, whether it's respectful to be respectful with a push.
Yeah. Yeah. But to your point later on with Anakin, when it dawns on, we had that conversation with Shmi and she's like, no father. I mean, I think there's a little bit of a spiritual reawakening and maybe some confirmations and some rewards for faith. I think there's some big Qui-Gon stuff going on later on. And I think you're right to point it out. The difference.
Awesome. Awesome. Good. Good. I'm not imagining Qui-Gon things. No. So Boss Nass confirms, mind trick or no, whether it's effective, that what Qui-Gon is interpreting about the Gungan culture from Jar Jar is correct, because he says, Yusa having the life play with this in Hissin. And Jar Jar responds, uh-huh. Then Boss Nass does his big Boss Nass thing. This is the thing that if like Boss Nass did a concert, everybody would be, do that.
Yeah.
He shakes his head, throwing spittle around. The subtitles label it as loud blubbering, and then he proclaims in his big moment of judgment, be gone with him. How do you interpret the loud blubbering? What is that, and why is Boss Nass making this decision?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, if tick, tick, tick is frustration, this is all out just anger and resignation and knowing when you're defeated. This is a chess game. A holo chess game. We got a bit of a checkmate here from Qui-Gon. Boss Nass knows because he's invoked something, right? He's invoked that your gods demand this. That's why I love maybe Yusa having the life play with this and hissing. I mean, he's just like, God damn it, man. I I thought I had it. I really want to punish you, and now I can't. He's upset. He's upset.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get that. There definitely seems some frustration. I think I also have just started to take it as like that's maybe Boss Nass's version of Queel's I Have Spoken, except for with actual like governmental societal power behind it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because doesn't he do he does a similar thing with Padme. When they decide to make their bond.
That's true, right? So, yeah. So that one, I would say, is less angry, right? Yeah?
Yeah, it's a happier blubbering.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, two sides, one coin.
Yeah, so I have no idea if that's what it is, but I do kind of like it as, like, this is like the Gungan version of, like, many cultures taking, like, a gavel or a stone and going, bunk. So it is.
Yes. Yes.
It's very different.
Ooh, yeah, no, I like that. Yeah, I still say it's two sides, one blubber, but I think it is kind of a, yeah, end of conversation or big decision made. Oh, I like that interpretation, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but I like your interpretation, too, of it's just, like, anger of, like, I have tried to be done with this conversation since it began.
Yes.
What other activities did they interrupt with this? I also just kind of like that. Okay, well, the life play is a real thing when he's asking him. It almost has this, to me, this sort of like a judge quality of like, Jar Jar, is this true? Because you know that's how this works if that's true.
Right.
So like, why didn't you just tell me that first thing? Right. So like the life play is a real thing. Mm. And in some ways, like maybe Boss Nass was excited to punish Jar Jar. He certainly seems like it with that smile. But it also makes Jar Jar not his problem. Of like, well, go. I think they're all going to die in my bongo that I'm sacrificing. Go.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. A little dark. A little dark tone now, right? from Boss Nass.
Yes. This is this is showing the stasis, the place from which Boss Nass can grow.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe Nass later on thinks there's a lot of things going on. He's very happy with Jar Jar bringing peace between them and the Naboo, right? But also maybe there's a little bit of respect from Boss Nass. Old Rugar Nass is like, well, you did get him through the planet core. He doesn't know what happened. You did come out of the other side.
Yeah. 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 Well, certainly. Yeah. There's certainly a lot of respect by the time of the Bombad General promotion.
Yeah.
So as we wrap up the scene here, Jar Jar is released from his cuffs. He realizes once again that he has no good options, saying, count me out of this one. Better dead here than dead in the core. And then questions himself yet again. Ye gods, what is Misa saying? is this a relatable moment of comedy from Jar Jar?
Well, first of all, we really do get our answer. Better dead here. He's dying.
That's true. But he could be being melodramatic, right?
He could be.
He could be like, they're not going to let me play video games. I'm going to die.
I don't get kombucha. Yeah, that's telling there. It's a little chaotic moment. And I do remember going, well, where's Jar Jar thinking here? But I do at the end of the day, I really do love this Jar Jar moment. You gods, what does Misa say? Like, just like, it's Jar Jar often succeeds in spite of himself, right? Some stuff later on we see. It might be clumsy to a fault, but clumsy to a victory as well. And I think, going back to your point, man, he's always down and out, but sometimes he does it to himself. And this is one of those moments where it's just like, what am I doing? God, and we've all had those moments.
Yes. You know?
Of two handfuls into ding dongs going, what am I doing? No wonder I'm gaining weight. Like, what am I doing?
Well, what do you want to do? Not eat a ding dong? Well, yeah, no, I guess that's a good point. I do want to eat a ding dong. That's why I was here. Yeah.
Very hard for me.
It's very hard not to eat ding dongs. yeah, I think it feels to me like when he offered help at the beginning, it's like, oh, yeah, I'll take you to my city. Wait, no, that's a terrible idea. Oh, now they're reminding me that a terrible thing is going to happen to me if I stay here. Mm-hmm. And it just paints Jar Jar as, like, okay, well, let me think through my options. Okay.
Yeah.
Two to three terrible options always. Great. So, and in some ways, it's a little bit relatable of that. Like, yeah, look, life is challenging. And sometimes, you know, you have your pick of two scary options, but, you know, you got to choose your path. Like, I think it's a comedy moment. I think it's meant as comedy, but in terms of the general sort of oeuvre of Jar Jar, that he panics and it's this funny comedy thing. But it is ultimately like, well, choose your path because everybody has to. And I think that's what he's doing here. He says better dead here than dead in the core, but he knows it isn't true. So he goes to the core.
Yeah. Good job.
Yeah. Good job, Jar Jar. And of course, it's the right choice because he eventually does help bring the Gungans and the Naboo together. So that's it for the scene itself. I have a couple of conclusion questions, Ken. Mm-hmm. What do you think Boss Nass and his council talk about when Jar Jar and the Jedi leave?
I think we don't really know the council too well. And maybe there's some EU or supplemental material with names and ranks and whatnot. But I think there's a little bit of more blubbering. I think Nass is really upset that he's lost Jar Jar. A little bit of that. But I think there might at one point might be a. I'd love to think that there's a serious discussion at some point about what is happening and what is the threat and what are they saying? What these Jedi are saying true on any level? And then that resonates with Nass at some point. I think he's a good leader. I think he's a proud leader. And I think he does what he does for the betterment of his people. But I would love to see that council. I don't know if he's surrounded by a bunch of yes Gungans, but I would love to see someone be like, Okay, but Jar Jar's gone. Tarples, we'll talk about that. But like, what are we gonna do about that? Because they are up there, and we feel as though they're not gonna find us. But is that true? Like, I'd love to see if that conversation happened.
Yeah, yeah. I think that I get this picture. This is just total headcanon that Boss Nass is kind of, even though he's like, come on, we got stuff to do. You're outsiders. You shouldn't be here. You keep turning around, have another question. Just be gone with you. That he kind of can't let it go. I like the picture that he's just like, can you believe the ego on that Jedi? Did you hear that? Did you hear that young one who tried to society explain to me about how things work? Did you hear that? God, they're pompous, just like the Naboo. And like, then they're like two other Gungan High Council members who are like kind of whispering of like, we need to get him back on track. This is the mechanics is actually a problem.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Maybe they discuss the bongo budget of like, can we really afford a bongo? But yeah, I mean, I think this is one of the great things of Phantom Menace that there are kind of these big story details that are just like thrown out in dialogue, right? Of that they, the Trade Federation, once they do have the Naboo locked down, they're looking for those rumored underwater villages, right? And then they find them, but the Gungans have fled. So there is also the possibility that, Boss Nass is saying, God, pompous Jedi. And then the rest of the council is like, yeah, but should we look into this?
Yeah.
Should we send some scouts? Should we take this seriously? Oh, damn. This is serious,
Yeah. Look, and where we find them in the sacred place a little bit later on, it's weird to me. It reminds me a lot of the stuff going at play in Two Towers with King Theoden. If people are familiar with the movie versions, I'm talking specifically here, but just this idea of, where is Gondor in our time of need? If they light the beacons, are you going to answer? No, we're going to take care of ourselves because they don't care about us. And Nass kind of probably has that vibe. They run away, not unlike the people of Rohan going to Helm's Deep. It's in their tradition. It's where they go. It's where they go to hide and save themselves. And to find them there, for them to not go back, they don't go back to the city. Jar Jar knows where we go when we get into trouble. They're in trouble, and Nass probably is like, we're going to fight to the end. We are a proud people. We got a grand army, but I think you find him in that spot. And Padme is lighting the beacons of Gondor. She's just finding the right way to present it and the right way to say, enough line. That's my decoy. This is me. And I'm bowing before you because I'm sorry. Sorry for everything that's gone on here, but we need your help. And I think Nass has that moment of realization for himself. I think it's credit for him because he could have been like, no, be gone with you. But now I know we definitely need you and we can work together. Gondar calls, Rohan will answer.
That is some great Lord of the Rings center to connect it. Yeah. And I love what you're saying of Padme does do this great diplomacy and this great honesty. But the Gungans do have their backs up against the wall in the sacred place. They know they're in trouble in that moment. And to give some credit, maybe some growth to Kenobi. Kenobi does not raise his hand and go, hey, remember that stuff I was saying about the symbiont circle and what happens to them will affect you too?
Yeah.
Funny meeting you here in the sacred place, Boss Nass, says Obi-Wan Kenobi. He doesn't, though, which is good for him.
Yes. So
do you want, you mentioned this, do you want Boss Nass to appear in future Star Wars storytelling? Like, this is an easy one to joke about because he is such a sort of outrageous character with, in our opinion, slightly outdated CGI. So he can be a character that you go to for jokes, right? But do you seriously want him to appear anywhere else?
I really do. How and why and the amount can be up for debate. I want it to be more than a passing reference of Boss Rugar Nass died and was replaced by, you know, this next. We got a little bit of that, right? There's more bosses on the way. It was Boss Leone, right?
Boss Leone in the Clone Wars, yeah.
Yeah. So there's more to tell there. One example, the reason I'd be excited, you know, we mentioned talking about TV show or live action or something like that, and just a better version of the tech behind him. But I'm thinking of Pogga the Lesser, and when Pogga the Lesser pops back in a Catalyst, and you have some great scenes with Krennic, who kind of comes off as this Hans Landa kind of guy in the Catalyst novel at times. It was a great use of Pogga the Lesser, the great use of going, hey, remember that click guy that you maybe made fun of in college or something? Here he is again, and it works. And we'd learn a little bit more of the Geonosian culture and everything. I think it could work with Boss Nass. I think you could find a way, and maybe it's before. I don't know. Maybe you go back some years. I'm not saying he needs to appear in, you know, High Republic series. What I'm saying is the Acolyte is about Boss Nass.
Yes, absolutely. Boss Nass and Mother Talzin knew one another for sure. not that the Acolyte is about the Night Sisters. It's just what everybody seems to feel. Anyway, don't need to get into the Acolyte. We will eventually, and I'm looking forward to that show. But yeah, I think so. We know that he is not the ruler during the Clone Wars because we meet a new boss during the Clone Wars animated series. But we know that Boss Nass is around because he attends Padme's funeral in Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
So I think there's a part of me, this idea that, you know, maybe he's getting up there in Gungan years, and I really, really want more storytelling on and about Naboo during the Imperial reign. Mm. And I don't care if it's a comic book, maybe, who knows, maybe Andor, I think probably not, but I kind of don't care where. I would be very curious if, you know, Boss Nass, having been through everything that he's been through and having wisdom, there's an interesting story of like old man Nass is working for the rebellion in his twilight years.
I'm bored. 100% on board.
Awesome. Well, I'll get right in my fanfic.
Old Man Nass, directed by James Mangold.
Wouldn't that be a thing if just, I mean, he did Logan, great job. He's working on Indiana Jones and just like, what is Mangold's next old person project?
I love
in that. A good way. Okay, so final question here, Ken. Now that we've gone through it all, what's your summary of the scene? What's your big takeaway of what it's about and why you like it or value it?
I value it because it just really takes the big themes we're about to dive into for essentially 9 movies, but particularly this one. It just puts it right in center stage. It makes you think about it. There's not every moment is clear. And I go back to this scene often because I go back to this character often, this character of Boss Nass, this proud leader of this proud people who have been forced into a corner, and how do they get themselves out of it, and how do they get them in the right way that's right for them, the right for their culture, and right for everyone going forward. I think it's powerful stuff. It's also so wonderfully Star Wars. I do not think it's boring at all anymore. There was probably a point where I did think that, and there was probably a point where you watch a lot of videos telling you that this is just a pointless scene. There's so much going on here. When I think we were talking about what to do, and I think you just kind of suggested this one, it was like, absolutely. It's an important scene to the building block of this franchise.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad that we got to dig in, because we've talked a little bit about Boss Nass and kind of joked about Boss Nass, but you know, I didn't realize that you were as all in on Boss Nass as you are, and it's so great.
I really
And there's so much going on in this scene. I think the way Boss Nass is presented, it's weird and fun. It's the great side of fantasy, of just there's an element of comedy and weirdness and flavor that is absolutely strong enough for people to be saying Planet Core in a weird voice years later and celebrating that moment. It's a great picture of how the Jedi conduct themselves in the galaxy, like these specific Jedi, but just watching Jedi interact in the galaxy. And I enjoyed that even back in the day because we didn't really get to see that. We got to see Luke become a Jedi and a little bit of how he conducted himself as a Jedi in Return of the Jedi. But going back to this is those glorious days when the Jedi Knights were everywhere. And this is an example of how they interact with different parts of the galaxy in this scene. And then I think most importantly, it is laying the foundation of these great ideas about empathy, connection, the importance of helping others, and that helping others is also helping yourself. And I think it's presented in a way that is very clear, but I don't think it's super naive because it's showing all these moments of conflict between the Gungans and the Naboo. It's hinting at the depth of it. It's hinting at, you know, Obi-Wan still has a lot to learn. It's making you question, like, understand where Qui-Gon's coming from. Did he need to do that mind trick? How is Jar Jar being punished? There's lots of, like, plenty of room for darkness and ambiguity as we have experienced. But the big picture idea that's being communicated is even in this dark, complex, weird galaxy, we just have to try to go toward light and life, go toward helping each other and finding connection and believing that we're all connected. And I think that's what ultimately is really powerful to me about this scene.
Absolutely. Well said indeed. And yes, a lot of passion for Boss Nass, a lot of passion for the little fun corners of Star Wars that we love just spending time with.
Yeah, exactly. So we will be spending even more time in even more corners, all of our general deep dive discussions, but also doing some more of these scene by scenes. It's fun to do we've done some of like the big scenes, right? But it's fun also to dig into some of these scenes that have a mixture of weird and fun and comedy and silliness and controversy and depth and just really finding out what's there. So that is it for our deep dive. Ken, do you want to let people know where they can find us?
Absolutely, we'll do that. We are on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're available on a lot of different platforms, including Anchor, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Amazon Music, and Spotify. Merch is available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. Patreon.com/ForceCenter is where you can support us directly. And you can follow me at KatNapsock or go to my website, KatNapsock.com, or check out the GPA.fun over there. Me, Josh, Mark, Riley, and more, having fun at the Good People Association. And for you, Joseph.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all my other comedy adventures, my other podcast, Obsessed, comedy albums, future live shows, all kinds of stuff like that. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Boss Nass and his fun, strange little hat, this has been Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us.
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.